Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Motorsport Republic are on tour. We are lucky enough to have reigning ASBK champion and king of the baggers racer, Troy Herfoss. Welcome, mate.
Thanks, boys. It's good to be here eventually. We had a chat about this last year and had a bit of a deal going on to ride baggers. I wanted to wait and talk about it, and then that happened, and then I put it off and couldn't make it happen. And now here we are in Redbank Plains.
What a place.
What a spot.
Mate, this place is absolutely terrifying.
Driving up here, it was a little bit, but you got a brand new house. It must be the first people to rent this joint.
I think we might be, but this must be like an old psych house or something.
Yeah, there's something weird about it.
It's a bit sketch.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I went for a run yesterday morning, and I went past about three cracked ends. I reckon I got secondhand high from everyone smoking bongs out the front of their garage. It was pretty scary.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done three trips to America this year, and you know, it's like the goal is to try and save some money and stay, don't overdo it on the accommodation. Yeah. Man, at COTA, the team told me where they were staying. I'm like, oh, it's a bit expensive. I'll just stay in this area. Super 8 sounded good, had a good rating. It was under an overpass, and man, I reckon I got high going to the room every night. Like, and there was a party outside every night. You wake up and there's half a bottle of red wine sitting there, and like, it's just, I don't know. It's hard to know. The ratings didn't match up to where I was staying.
Ugh, it's crazy.
It's a pretty cool town, apparently, Austin.
Yeah. Right now, trying to work out, you know, if we can live there as a family, and you know, if I'm going to race next year, do we stay over there, and then where do we live?
Yeah.
In Austin, it was really nice. It was sort of a little bit like the Gold Coast, really. Like, it's sort of the climate, and there was a lot of like home owned cafes and restaurants and motels, and whereas a lot of the stuff you see over there is, you know, chain restaurants, and it's still good quality stuff, but it's just not what we're used to here. So it sort of had more of a homely feel in Austin. I liked it.
Yeah, I think we're talking to one of our pod favorites, Joe Marinello, and he was saying it was a bit like that, a bit like Melbourne, almost, he said as well, with a bit of country in it.
Yeah.
The bullfrog.
And Joe's been everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, hasn't he ever?
Great man to know.
Yeah.
Bad guy to get, you know, stuck with for a night out, because it's a guaranteed headache, but a good time.
Yeah, Mr. ASBK, self-proclaimed, I think he calls himself.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I had a message Monday morning. I won't repeat it on here, but yeah, he was pretty annoyed I didn't come for a beer with him.
It's unlike him, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. How's your weekend been so far anyway, Troy?
Here at Queensland Raceway, it's been hasn't been great. We've had a few little things with the bike that I don't understand and sort of learn about, but nothing like we haven't done anything wrong essentially. It's just a complicated bike, basically, and trying to understand it. Coming back from the bagger as well, it's hard to sort of adjust in a short period of time. But just a few little things, like this morning I rolled out to try an SC2 tyre, which is the harder front tyre, and rolled into turn one, had a vibration. I come in and the tyre's like falling apart and cracking, and I think the tyre had just been like maybe they put it on the warmer a few times to try it and then taken it off and it had gone cold, and just over time we just didn't realise it had been sitting around. And then, you know, in qualifying, a bit of fuel overflow was coming out of my visor. I could see it wasn't a big issue, but it's just like just a few little things like that have been getting thrown at me. Nothing that's going to slow you down too much. Obviously the tyre I had to change, but so nothing – just a lot of unlucky stuff. Like in Sydney, I got a bit crook when I got there and had COVID or whatever. COVID doesn't seem to hurt you that much, but that's what I was diagnosed with. I just had the flu and had a little crash, and then that hurt the bike, and then it didn't start in the race, and I missed the race. And then, you know, we go into the race and we got one bike each because I'm on the spare bike. So we get Brock going as quick as possible, then throw the wets on mine, leave the dry setup on, dump myself on my head. I'm like, oh, geez, I'm creating a bit of my own bad luck here. So hopefully, like, I felt really good in Q2, end of Q1, and, like, I went out in the second-hand tyre before the rain set in, and I'd done almost my best lap of the weekend. So it's all going in the right direction. It's just that Jonesy was so blisteringly fast. It's like if he does that for two or three laps in the race, he'll be a second half up the road. So that was really impressive.
Yeah, Lightning, 107.1, wasn't it?
Yeah, which is, yeah, I mean, we've been riding here for a long time. It wasn't long ago we were giving the sevens a little bit of a nudge, and the tyres aren't any different last year. And I don't imagine his bike's too much different. I think he just – and he's crook as a dog too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's just done a really, really good job.
He's been quick as all weekend, man. He's been building up to that, especially this morning. It was good to see.
Yeah. We saw you Friday morning and you looked pretty worse for wear, tired, maybe a bit jet lagged.
Yeah, I got like same thing. I'm just trying to not overspend on the travel basically. Yeah. So I buy the cheapest ticket to the States and it's like Gold Coast to Sydney, Sydney to San Francisco, San Francisco to Dallas. And then I flew over to Atlanta for the race, and then so I'm like Atlanta, Dallas, San Francisco, Sydney, Gold Coast. I'm like, I should have just spent $1,000 more and done two flights. Anyway, one flight gets cancelled, so I miss the next one. Then the next day, that next flight I'm on gets cancelled. So 2 days in a row, I'm home 2 days later than I should have been.
Yeah.
But the reward was I had a whinge about it and got a business upgrade. So I was
not too bad.
I got to fly home like a like a high roller.
Yeah.
So like I had a good sleeve and stuff. I didn't feel too bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just when you come to FP3 and it's, you know, 3 in the morning.
Yeah. Like,
so you just start, yeah. It's all good. It's all the stuff that the GP guys have to go through, I guess.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know how they do it. Well, speaking to Brent Stevens.
Yeah. I haven't listened to the podcast yet. I'm looking forward to I'm waiting for a travel day.
Yeah, good. It was
that was unreal.
It was so interesting. And he was obviously talking about the traveling and just how you just get into this zone of doing it. And I think he said he even forgets what country he's in sometimes or where he is. It's just such on the go. Like,
doesn't he have a great story? Like I've known him for a lot of years now, and we talk a lot at the track, but I'm keen to sit down and hear about the details of his time in GP.
Yeah, it's a very interesting listen. Not to, you know, toot our own horn, but no, he was awesome. He was he had some crazy stories, and we were just like eating out of the palm of his hand. It was great. Yeah,
that's
good.
Really
good.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very cool to see. Very cool to listen to, I should say. So yeah, the States. What's the obviously the baggers compared to the V4, it must be just wildly different.
Yeah, like I couldn't have picked two different bikes really. It's like the V4R Ducati is probably the closest I'll ever get to riding a GP bike.
Yeah.
Yep. Like and coming from the Honda, that was a great bike too. This is just different, more advanced in the electronics, and it's got a really stiff feel to it. And speaking to young Harry Voigt about it when we raced, like he seems to think it's pretty close to a Moto2 bike in the way the front end feels. And then the Indian Challenger, it's huge. Like, man, the bike's so big. It's got so much torque, so much power. It's really heavy. It's a relaxed riding style in the way you sit on the bike. And it's got no electronics. So.
Oh, really?
No, you're not allowed to have any electronics.
Oh, okay,
You can cut power out of the bike, but yeah, you can't. There's no traction control or any of that kind of stuff. So, say in the races, we don't have any wheel speed sensors or anything. We can't. You know, it's just not allowed. It's one way of making it what it is, really. And I guess the classes, it's made to just be a really raw sort of race, really.
Yep.
Like, you know, just go and ride these big bikes as fast as you can, but then. The preparation on the bikes is like crazy. Like it's honestly, it's not, there's GP and honestly, like these bikes are so trick.
Yeah.
like my swing arm's just like a billet swing arm, just perfectly made.
Oh,
like
unreal.
All the parts are custom.
Yeah.
Like the engines are highly strung. They never tell us what horsepower they've got, but like a standard Indian Challenger must only be, what, around 100 horsepower, I imagine. These bikes are knocking on 200 horsepower. Like, could you imagine buying a V4R, which comes standard at 180, 200, and doubling the horsepower? Like,
it's crazy.
They're so highly strung, but it makes it so much fun to ride because, like, somewhere like Phillip Island, you can go around the whole track and just light the rear tire up like crazy. just absolutely belt smoke off the rear tire. It's obviously not the fast way around the track, but that's what the potential is. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
And because the bike's so long and soft, you can do it quite easily. Like with a super bike, you've got quite a rigid feel, yeah. and there's a bit of punishment when you try and slide the bike. Mm. It can go wrong really easy. These bikes are quite forgiving. They handle really good, way better than you'd probably think they would. So, yeah, so far it's just been a dream so far. Like going to a new country, I don't know the riders I'm racing against, and new tracks, and it's just a blast. It's so much fun.
Yeah, awesome. And you've been taking it pretty well, man. Like a couple challenge wins, couple race wins, and if I'm not mistaken, you're leading the points as well.
Yeah.
Like I remember talking to you in Sydney about it, and you just said it's the biggest thing ever because they created it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like talk us through like when you put it on pole, for example, like what are the celebrations like when you're back in the pits?
It's really cool because it's like last year was a tough year for the team. Yep. Like Harley went really well last year, and this team's had a lot of success. Like they've won two championships with Tyler O'Hara, but yeah, coming into this year, I guess because they obviously hired me thinking that I had the potential to be going well. But we just had a dream start, like track record at Daytona, pole position, and, you know, we didn't get a win there. But, like, yeah, the excitement, it's really cool. Like, it's because there's a bit of surprise, you know. Like, they obviously have faith in me for putting me on the bike, but I guess there was a bit of a surprise that I was as competitive as I was. So, yeah, at the moment, it's literally like a dream. We're leaving the races just so motivated and just loving life. It's great fun.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
That's so cool. And it just looks amazing. It almost seems like it's got a bit of a cult following now. The bag is like, I remember first seeing it, I was like, what the fuck is going on? I think I saw him going to like Laguna Seca or something. I was like, how?
Yeah.
How did it all come about? Like, who approached you and were you just like, what?
Yeah. So I had an ambition of trying to do something this year overseas while I'm still not too old. When I left Honda, I didn't have any idea what I was doing. I just knew I wanted to do something different, and for no other reason than just I've been doing it a long time with Honda and it had been great, and we had a bit of a bad run there with the injury and we dug ourselves out of that, and I just thought it was good timing to maybe have a change, and I wanted to try and go overseas while I could. And yeah, I had contact with Wayne Rainey at Moto America and told him that I really want to try and come to America. And obviously, like honestly, my ambition was to try and get a superbike ride, and obviously that time of year and, you know, it's going to be hard to find a ride. But yeah, he asked if I'd be interested in riding a bagger, and yeah, that was it. Got the contact of Gary Gray at Indian, and we had a chat and it sounded exciting. And it wasn't that hard, really. It was sort of, it was an easy sell for me.
That's good.
Yeah, and then when I rode the bike, it was fun and I enjoyed it. And yeah, there was a lot of unknown. Like I was pretty nervous going to the first test, but I'd already done the deal, so it was it. I had no choice. But yeah, and I had a small opportunity to go to England and ride, and it just seemed like it could be a good option for me long term as well.
Yeah.
So. Obviously attached to someone like Indian and Polaris, a huge company. So, you know, I hope long-term it's been a good decision, and so far it's been great. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, awesome.
That's awesome. Daniel and I were just talking about that past couple of weeks. We're like, the AMA series, or Moto America, whatever it is these days, really seems to be taking off again. Like it really had its heyday with like Matt Mladen and Ben Spies back in the day, and probably tapered off a little bit, but now it's really kicking really goals. And I never realized until I think a couple of weeks ago that it was Rainey running the show again. He's obviously putting a lot of effort into it, and you can see it now how much bigger it is.
Yeah, it's like, and so when I started my career in Supermoto 05, 6, 7, 8, that was sort of the end of the glory years for AMA Superbike. And like I've always been a huge road race fan. That was my goal, was to be a road racer. So when I got to America, I was going to watch road racing and, yeah, seeing Matt and Ben battle it out, like they were glory days.
Yeah.
Like they were legends of the sport over there. And I mean, Ben's probably my age. I think he might be 1 year older than me, maybe. So it's, but yeah, he got in and out of his career pretty quick. But Yeah, it's had a lot of hard years, but it feels like the series is picking up a lot. And then this first round in Road Atlanta for Superbike, there was a lot of really competitive bikes on the grid, and the racing was close. And it's a place where I want to be. I've got an itch I need to scratch. So I'd love to try and get onto one of them Superbikes and see where I fit in that field.
Bloody oath, man! That sounds so cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty stacked field too. I'd actually really enjoy seeing how you'd stack up against them and show them how it's done, you know?
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice to see, where we're at. And even, like we've got a lot of young guys in Australia going good, and even guys, the older guys in Superbike, they're still not too old to be going and having a go. Mm. And, I think that we could be more competitive than the world believes we are, I guess. We had our glory days in Australia too in the early 90s where, guys were getting picked out of top five in Superbike or Super Sport, and they were going and doing really well on the world stage. So it'd be nice to sort of get over there and have a bit of success. I mean, it's already been really good, but it'd be nice for these young guys to be getting phone calls to say come and race in America. That'd be really cool.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at Max Dowfer today. He was smashing out lap times. Even Cam Dunk was, 15, 16 on a Superbike.
Like, oh, yeah, I was using him for a tow every time. I'm double his age. I'm like, I can't believe this. What's my life come to? I'm looking at a 16-year-old to get a tow.
It's so cool to see, and that's definitely what the sport needs in Australia. And like you see, that's right, a 15-year-old, they go, oh, my God, I was just playing Call of Duty and eating bags of chips when I was 15. This guy's running R1.
Yeah, well, I'm too old for Call of Duty. I only started Call of Duty 2 years ago. But, I've always said that, we just need to make road racing cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like when you're 15 years old, it's not cool to go and put a leather suit on. Like, you go and get your Alpine Star motocross kit and your dirt bike, and you go to the track and you're doing jumps, and it's just cooler. And when you're a kid, that's what counts.
Like, that's right.
You know, and you just do what looks cool, really. But I think in the last few years with the junior stuff, and it looks cool. You come in and do ride the 150s. Yeah. You got a cool setup, and it's sort of been made to just be a bit more appealing to the young guys, really. And I think, like, Tom DeParis's sort of age group, he came out of the 400s and sort of that first of the 400s guys, I reckon. And so once them guys are fully established as road racers, that Superbike field's just going to be flooded with young talent. So you got Max and Brock and Cameron. There's more, I'm sure of it. And, there was a few years there where it was a bit stale in the development part. And that's probably why I've been lucky enough to stay around in Glen and all us older guys.
You are right with the development part. Like, the OJC is awesome. I think Gary McCoy helps head the project there. And, like, you know, the kids can lean on. Like, he's got such a wealth of knowledge as well. So it's really cool to see that there is a path up, because that's really what road racing needs in Australia. And it can be cool. Like, it is cool. Like, you know, you see Europe and the amount of, like, kids that are going in there, like, just a baseline of kids. We're speaking to Damo Cullen about it today. Like, there's just so many. So it can be done, but just needs a whole lot of work at the same time.
Yeah, it does. And the, like, you know, it's a big step for – it's just a lot for a kid to go to Europe, really. Like,
yeah.
Like, when you see, like Joel Kelso and Jacob Ralston, he was second, I think,
second,
last night.
Like,
imagine being a kid just – you know, going to the other side of the world. You can't just catch up with your mates. Like, you don't finish the weekend and go back to your house in Spain or Italy and hang out with your mates. It's just a bit bigger, bit more an investment, so financially and emotionally. So, like, when you're a kid, it obviously weighs down on you a bit more. So, yeah, we just need to make sure we prepare these kids as good as we can. And I think don't get over there too early. Some of these guys, the parents just get excited and end up packing their bags and going to Europe, and it's a tough gig over there. So you got to make sure you're on your game.
Oh yeah,
that's a massive investment for someone to pull the pin. Well, I mean, you even hear it with Miller. I think he tells a story about his old man saying, like, if you're not going to get up and go for a bit of a trot around the track, like, pack your bags, let's go home, sort of thing.
Yeah, well, it's hard. Like, and I was brought up, you know, we enjoy it, and if you don't enjoy it, we don't do it.
Yep.
And I'm stoked with I'm so happy with my path, and I've got a great relationship with my dad and my mum, and I've had success, and I'm really thankful for that. But like I do wonder, like, you know, if when I was 10 years old, my mum and dad were hard on me, or harder, and they pushed me and grew me a bit more for that sort of professional lifestyle, and like, would that have been different? Who knows? Like, I may have just not had a good relationship with my parents and didn't like the sport after 5 or 6 years, or maybe I might have excelled a bit earlier, and them first few years where I was sort of a bit sort of on a slower trajectory, I might have got there quicker. Like, I don't know. You just never know.
That's
so
right.
There's no way of knowing what's the best way to do it, but you see it work from both angles. Mm. Kids just got talent and they do it for enjoyment and they make it. Or some kids work really hard and they get pushed hard by the parents and they make it. So there's no right or wrong way of doing it, but it's a fine line between work and fun, I guess.
As a kid as well. And you see it. It's so common in any sport, whether it be motorcycle racing or car racing or football, whatever it is. If they get pushed so young as a kid by the parents, and how often do you see fractured relationships there because of it as well, you know? And it's only – and you speak to kids or races or whatever it is, and they've got a different mindset than a normal 15. It's almost like a 15-year-old and a 25-year-old, even though it's 15. Like, it's just so different. Their mindset's incredible.
It's fun seeing – like, I love that side of sport, like the psychological side of sport. And all these kids, you got talent, so it's not – when you see them right, they're all good. When you see the way they conduct themselves and their mental approach, it's impressive to see a 15, 16-year-old kid be able to control themselves the way they do. So, it's a good time for Australian racing at the moment. Like, we've got two guys in Moto3, we've got Senna in Moto2. Yeah. You know, obviously Jack's just like so close, like
just got to piece it all together.
It's the same. It's just such a tough sport. Like,
He
would know how close he is. It's like, what have I got to do just to be on the podium every week? And it must be hard. We don't hear anything about the technical side, but like I was in Coda watching the races, and I got to sit on pit lane. So I'm sitting there watching Jack come in after the race, and he gets in and his front tyre was absolutely rooted.
Yeah.
It was so cooked. I never read anything about that.
Yeah.
After it, he didn't say anything about it that, to my knowledge. So we can all just sit there and judge him.
Of course.
And he's got to deal with that.
He's got to cop it.
Like, it's just, it'd be hard. Like, and he looked like he wasn't gassed one bit. Like, to me, it looked like his tyre was cooked and he just rode the bike in. But like, he got a mediocre result, I guess. And like, it's just,
he gets hammered.
What
for
do you
it.
Do? Do you hammer? You do tell everyone about your problems, and then the sponsors don't like it. And then, but yeah, you just got to deal with it and try and be better next time, I guess. And it's a tough sport. It's the tough side of sport, really. Yeah. Like,
it's very cutthroat. And it doesn't help as well, because you got Pedro Acosta, this 19-year-old kid on the same bike coming in, and dude's a freak.
Exactly. And we don't even know if it's the same bike.
That's the thing.
I'm not trying to start a rumor, but you don't know. Like, at that level, you just don't know what they're on. And but that's part of the game, I guess. You got to keep your mouth shut and do your job. And it's a fine line. It's always a fine line.
Yeah. And you've seen when people have opened their mouths, they don't last very long.
No.
Like, they get removed pretty quick. Smart. As you said, it's, you know, sponsorships and, you know, it's not a good look for the brand and other things. So,
yeah. And if you are going to start having a whinge, you better make sure you're getting some results pretty quick.
Yeah, that's right.
You got to back it up.
Exactly, yeah.
Otherwise, you look like a bit of a fool.
When you first threw your leg over that bagger and you took it out pit lane, what were you thinking?
Am I going to crash trying to roll out of pit lane? The bike's so tall. And I was parked in this garage, and I get on the bike, and it's like, it's really tall. It's probably taller than an adventure bike.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. And get on it, and it's like, it rumbles. Like, it really rumbles. You knock it into gear, and like, it's got so much torque that it'd nearly do a backflip if you held it flat. Like, it just got so much torque. So rolled out. So how it happened was, we went to a test, Eagles Canyon in Texas, and it was a private test. Just
that's
top,
a, that's just such top. An American name for a track, Eagles Canyon.
It was funny. Yeah. it was, yeah, just myself and Tyler, the hooligan bike and the bagger. And we had 2 days of open track and it was like, I think 7 degrees and raining all first day. So we get to 4 p.m., we got until 5, and I just said to Charlie, so my crew chief is Charlie, who worked with me at Honda. So he comes with me, and I said to Charlie, man, I really would love this to go to bed tonight, having ridden this bike. Like, we'd been talking about it every day since I decided I was going to do it and established that he was potentially going to be working with me. And I'm like, I just need to know what it's like. And so Tyler runs... He was running a really stiff setup at the time, and so they put the wet setting in the bike. They put his wet setting in my bike, and I rolled out in 7 degrees and rain, and never seen this track or ridden a bagger before. And the thing was like stiff as a board. It was that stiff. I couldn't feel a thing. And I'm riding around like, I think I'd done like a 2:50 lap time, and my best lap in the dry was 1:55 or 1:56. Like, I was shitting myself. I did like 3 laps and I rolled in, and I'm like, on the way back to the motel, I said to Charlie, I think I've made a bad decision. Like, this this feels like scary. But anyway, went to bed, slept on it, got to the track the next day, and by lunchtime it was dry. Well, we established that it felt really stiff, and Charlie's like, oh, let's just start on the wet setting. And I roll out. And after 10 laps, I was in the wet mode, so like the softest power delivery, the least amount of power.
Yeah.
I was in a wet suspension setup and I was loving it. It was so easy to ride, and I just felt at home on it. It was just like riding supermoto cross with flat track, with road racing. And like, if I had to make a decision the night before, I would have been like, you know what? Might call Dion up at Honda and see if he wants to get the band back together, because I was like, I was shitting myself. But now, honestly, that second day when we got some dry laps, both the hooligan and the bagger, I just loved it. Like, it, because it was just new. I've been riding a superbike for so long, and there's all these different challenges now, and the bike's just so interesting. And it was really enjoyable. Got on the plane and come home, and I was stoked, ready to go.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. What's it like throwing it up the inside of someone? Because I've watched some clips and I'm like, fuck, how they made that pass? Like,
so when you decide to go for the pass, that's it.
You got to go.
You're not backing out of it. Like, and I haven't connected with another rider yet, but I imagine it'd just be like a car crash. Like, I seen Kyle Wyman at the replay at Coda behind me in the Mission Challenge race. He just T-boned the back of Bobby Fong because the track's really tight. And
yeah,
I guess Bobby switched direction and bang, they went into each other. It looked like a shunt in a car, like 300 kilo versus 300 kilo, just bang, straight into it. So, yeah, it's when you decide to make the pass, it's happening. Like, you can't manoeuvre the bike very easily. But, look, it's sort of easier when – I would hate to be out on a track with other superbikes because they can turn sharper, but when you're out with other baggers, we're all only capable of turning at the same speed or braking at the same force. So it just feels like another road bike, really. But the first corner, like, so at Coda or even Daytona, like, the way the pit exit goes, you start in pit lane there, you don't start on the banking. So when you come out of the pits, you go left, the first left, which is the slip road to go on the track. But on the start, you go past that onto the track. Well, in the Mission race, they don't have a warm-up lap. I got a good start, and I'm just going off the start. I start tipping into the wrong chute.
Oh.
and then I pull down the track, and then my teammate comes past. I nearly hit him, but I, out of my peripheral vision, I see him. So I'm like, oh, it's okay. But then the bag swings past, and I'm like, oh, shit, that bag's close. Like, you just don't... You don't think about it because you spend so many years riding the one bike, and then all of a sudden the bike's twice the size. Yep. So and then at Coda was the same, really tight first turn.
Yeah.
I just felt claustrophobic, basically. Yeah.
Oh, definitely, man. That's so nuts.
Yeah.
You're freaking out. Imagine that. Seeing a pannier come past you. No way.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's fun. How many's on the grid for the baggers?
What have we got? I think Daytona we had 16 and maybe 12 or 13 at Coda.
Yeah.
So not huge fields, but it's probably enough. Yeah, it's enough. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's popular. I'll be interested to see if it grows. I feel like it's going to grow before it stops. It's going to definitely keep going before it slows down. Like, guys really enjoy it, and it's bringing a lot of new people to the track. So, yeah, it'd be nice to see it grow.
It's a great idea. It's so smart because I really do think it's on like a upward trajectory. I remember when it first came in, I thought it was so interesting and cool. And now, like, you know, I've got an Aussie in there and he's obviously killing it. It's very cool, that's for sure.
You start to get invested more.
Yeah, you like, do.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Are you and Tyler the only two on Indian, or is there a couple more?
So there's myself and Tyler, Bobby Fong, who does the crossover to Superbike.
Yep.
He's on an Indian. Kyle Onsword, he's on an Indian. And then a lad named Max Flinders, who's a bit of a people's champ, actually. He was third in the last race in the wet. He had the big moment down the hill. I don't know if you've seen it on YouTube, but there's five of us. I hope I've got them all. But there's only five, I think. So
yeah.
The pressure's on.
Representing well, though.
Yeah. Quality over quantity.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
What about you guys? You guys have got a motorcycle background, or?
Yeah.
Yeah. What have you guys done in, like, what trail riding, motocross, flat track?
A lot of trail riding.
Yeah.
A tiny bit of motocross when I was a kid, but mostly trail riding. And I got a road bike as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a road bike now. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So same bit of trail riding as a kid.
Yeah.
Throwing myself over a lot of handlebars at the moment. And just got into track riding a couple of years back.
So, yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Just currently rebuilding a CBR 600.
Yeah.
That blew up.
That's right.
Two I've years ago. Yeah. Spoken about this. So that's, still in pieces.
Yeah.
And then, same as James, just on the road together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the enduro riding. I need to get another enduro bike. I had a 300 EXC, and Tom, the other fella, is with us. We used to go out once or twice a week, just up Mount Disappointment. Weird name for a place to ride, but Mount Disappointment. And that was, it's such good fun. But the problem with enduro riding is, like, you get the itch for it, and then you try and find harder and harder stuff, and then you're stuck in the middle of a canyon. You can't get out. You're like, why the fuck am I even doing this?
Yeah, and I just have PTSD of, like, being a kid, and back then, like, Dad's bike was a 650 Husaberg with a kickstarter, and, like, gets hot and that thing ain't starting.
Yeah.
Like, you just think, oh, man. But now it's, you got electric start, but there's still so much can go wrong. But, yeah, like, I grew up really enjoying trail riding. That was probably what I loved the most, going with Dad for trail rides. But, yeah.
It's so good. And, like, you know, you can ride on the road or whatever, but, like, one, it's dangerous. You don't know who's coming around the other corner in the car or whatever. You come off, you're hitting the barrier. Or worse than all that, you lose your license. That's the main thing I'm scared about. So,
yeah.
A trail riding, you can just kind of be as crazy as you want. And normally if you're doing super tight single trails, whatever it is, like, you're not going crazy fast anyway. So, you know, you fall off, it's not too bad. Hey guys, it's James from Motorsport Republica. Just want to give a shout out to HJC Australia. They have a brand new helmet coming out, the R412. Make sure you head down to your local dealer to check it out. It's got max defogging, four intakes, three exhaust vents. It comes with four different shell sizes and five different liners. It's got lift force and drag force reduced, optimized air ventilation. This helmet is an awesome new street helmet. Make sure you check it out. Go to hjc.com. Go to your local dealer and you better grab yours today. That's a fun part anyway.
Yeah.
Motocross though. Fuck, it's hard work.
It's an injury waiting to happen, isn't it?
You've done a bit of motocross though, haven't you?
Over the years I've done on and off, I've done some motocross.
Yeah.
I love motocross. Yeah. I follow the supercross and motocross. Yeah. It's sort of, supercross and MotoGP, they're my favourite sports to follow, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, big fan of motocross.
What do you think of Jet Lawrence and his domination so far?
It's good. Yeah, it's great for the sport. Like, it's funny. You just, some people just either wanting to win or lose. There's no one that's in the middle.
There's no one in
between. They either wanting to fail.
Isn't that interesting?
You're good, yeah. I just think, like, yeah, it's like, it was almost detrimental to him to get a perfect season. Like, you just expect that now.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's been, like, a bit of a lull then, and now he's found his feet again, and he's obviously, I'm sure there's a lot going on for in that sport, but, like, yeah, it looks like it's been a tough year for him, really, to, like, not just ride a motorbike. He's got to sort of deal with that pressure of being the perfect season guy.
Yeah.
And, And there's all every week it's like, oh yeah, but this guy wasn't there, and then
I know
Tomac wasn't there, and I'm a huge Tomac fan too, so I was really looking forward to that battle.
Yeah.
And then, like, Tomac was a little bit underwhelming the first round, and I'm like, oh no. And then, but now it's all looking really good for outdoors. Like, I hope Jet wraps up the series, but I'm glad it's going down to the wire with someone like Cooper Webb.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if you can beat Cooper Webb at his age, like at Jet's age, so young, and that guy's just brutal, mentally tough. And when he gets a bit of a sniff, he's a weapon. So if Jet can stitch this championship up against him at his best, like, that's going to go a long way for Jet. And I think going to the outdoors, I'm just praying that Tomac doesn't hang the boots up and rides. I think he will.
True.
Yeah.
Because he's good outdoors, and it'll 100%. Be nice to see a stack field and see how Jet goes. I think he'll still be as good as he was.
He's like revolutionary almost in how he rides. Like, he's so smooth.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's funny, last year I was doing a lot of motocross, and even at my age, I'm going to the track after watching him ride. I'm like, I'm going to stand up this morning. I'm just going to ride a gear higher and stand up and just flow so much. And you get out there and just reality hits you. It's like, it's crazy. Some of the stuff he does, and like, you can't even tell how rough them tracks are. Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, no way.
Like, it looks rough on TV. It's got to be like 6 foot deep of rough. Like,
we
go
out
to, I go to my local track, and at the end of the day, it seems rough. It's probably a highway to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It'd be like right on the road.
Yeah.
That's it. And like, you know, the fitness aspect, I think people underestimate with motocross riders. You have to be some of the fittest people on earth, because like, I dare anyone to go to any type of motocross track, especially if it's sandy. And if you're just even pull a couple laps together, you're going to be cooked. And then to do a 40, 35 minute moto, whatever it is, just like Jet standing up the whole way, plus lapping, you know, half the field, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then you like, I actually don't know how they do it.
Yeah, I honestly think they're up there with the fittest guys in the world. Like, there's just everything from the risk, like the dirt getting thrown at you. Yeah, like, it's just crazy. It's, so much respect for motocross guys. Like, I'm so glad I ended up on a clean sport like road racing.
And then you got supercross, and there's just no room for error, because if you're coming off on the whoops, okay, there could be a collarbone gone right there, or you miss a double, whatever it is. You miss a gear, or you see Ken Rocks on the weekend, he's really shock blue or whatever it was, and you know, he's now injured as well.
Launched into orbit.
Yeah, it was funny. In my supermoto days, I was lucky enough to do X Games. So that was always in a stadium on a supercross track, and it was always in August, so it was outdoor season. And the years I rode for KTM, they would just give me the key to the supercross track in Temecula, I think it was, or Murrieta in Southern California. And, man, talk about the glory days. Like, I'd get there. I'd be the only guy there. You open the gate, you go up, and there's six switches, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the for the water. Turn them on, water the parts you want to water, sit there and wait for it to get all tacky, and just go and ride supercross. I'd get like, I think it was always early August, so I'd get in there like 3 weeks early and just ride supercross for 3 or 4 weeks, because that was my weak point. And like, some days you'd see the test, because it was pretty sure Cowie was over on the highway, and then you drive in and it was like Honda, KTM, Suzuki and Yamaha, I think, like all around this area. And so like, some days you'd see the Honda test riders up there riding, and they'd come down, oh, do you mind if we do a few laps here? And no worries, he'd ride around, and I'd go up there and have a look, and it was so much fun. But obviously not like, I'd ride supercross on slick, so it was I wasn't moving very fast, but like, even on the slick tires, I'd be doing triple sections and hitting the whoops, but it'd take me so long to do it. Like, I'd spend the first 3 or 4 days double, wouldn't hit the triple.
Yeah.
And then after the month, I'm good. But like, those guys rock up on Saturday night and they just hit everything
straight away.
And I'd be the guy, like, when you see him walking the track, I should be able to triple this and triple into here or whatever. And I'd be the guy that would be just trying to tell myself that no one will do it. There's no way they'll triple that. There's no way. And I'd be like, I won't have to do that. First lap, one of the supercross guys will jump it. Because the first years I'd done the Supermoto X Games, like, Chad Reed was there, McGrath,
Was Pastrana like, there as well?
Pastrana was there. Like, oh, yeah. Revealed. And I wish social media was around because I don't have many memories of that. I've got one photo at home of, you know, Pastrana and I got the hands up and we're talking motocross language and I don't know what we're talking about, but like I got to meet them guys and vibe with them I've got the memories inside my head and these days you capture everything.
Yeah,
and like the cool shit we could have got from me crashing X Games during the Supercross sections, so I'd get in there and like they just jump it straight away, like, and I remember in 07 at X Games we just come into the stadium and it was like a triple step up, so the third was like a higher version of it, and it was a little bit sketchy, like it was pretty hard for even the Supercross guys, and I didn't even look at the road for a 50-minute session. I didn't even go on the road. I just rode the dirt section tried to get the balls to do that triple. And, it was just hard for me. The road comes so easy. The road was the easy part, but, I had to work hard for the Supercross. I don't – like motocross I'm fine with, but the timing you've got to have for Supercross is – it's another level.
It is.
Next level again.
And you see Euros try and come in and do it and it's – they can't – they can't gel with it either, You got to be doing it from, a young age and really be bred for it.
Yeah, you got to learn that timing when the fear's not there, because when you learn a bit of fear, it's hard to time jumps.
Yeah, bloody oath it is. So Supermoto days, obviously you were at X Games and did that, which is really, really cool. And a lot of people forget how big X Games were.
I was going to say it would have been prime time for the X Games as well.
Yeah.
It was really... like it was huge.
It was hot, yeah.
It was one of the biggest events in almost motorsport at one point. Like it must be before the GFC, obviously. They had Pastrana at one point. He was doing the freestyle rally. They had high jump.
Yeah, I was there when he rolled his car and racing against Colin McRae, I think it was. And
Yeah, that's right. And I remember that.
I think one of the years I was there, he'd done the double backflip.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus. Famous part. There's just – and he did all those events, which is – he's incredible.
He was X Games.
Mr. X Games, isn't he? I think he – I think it was a Gravity Games, he launched his RM125 into the San Francisco.
That was real early days, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was real, real early days.
I'm sure the fine was big, but it would have been worth it.
Yeah. Bloody oath. I think they just drained as much oil as they could and fuel out of that bike, and then he just tried to backflip into the San Francisco Bay and put a life vest under his jersey.
Yeah, the first time I got to go to the X Games, I was reserve, and thank God I was, because you guys probably wouldn't remember, but it was they just built a ramp up into the stadium and then put boards over the chairs and you just rode down it. And
I remember that.
And it went like this, it was four stories high. Oh, well, God. McGrath was launching from the bottom over everything all the way into this.
Oh, my God.
And then Reedy obviously started doing it and it was big enough where not all the Supercross guys were doing it. Mm. Like you just ride and step up and you'd lose 2 seconds. And I was reserve and I didn't get to ride, thank God. Because I was so far out of my depth at that stage. I was just a flat track kid that had gone to America and done all right, but the tracks weren't – there wasn't a lot of jumps on the tracks as far as timing goes. The first year I got to do it properly – It was still pretty crazy, but I was on a Husky that year and I was not a motocross guy. I didn't even go to a supercross track before I went to X Games. I just rode a bit of motocross and I was feeling pretty good at motocross, but it's just a different world.
Different ball game.
100%. How'd you get into Supermoto and everything in the States anyway?
Well, so I wanted to be a road racer and dad raced flat track and he was a good all round rider, and he just seen that there was a world championship for Supermoto and it was coming to Broadford in Australia. I think it was year 2000 or 2001. And Dad had a Husaberg 600, which was a bit of a weapon Supermoto bike at the time. I had a CR125 and there was a race at Broadford and I think there was a qualifier to get a wild card into the world championship when it comes to Australia. And I was only 15, so Dad took me down. He rode and I rode the 125 and Dad got third. He got a wild card to do Broadford, but he didn't do it. But and we just sort of enjoyed it, and we're like, okay, this is a way we can go to Wakefield Park, because that's where I lived, and get on the road and ride the Husaberg around like a road bike. And if I crash it, it's not going to cost a fortune. Yeah, I just like I always say, I got lucky. I guess you get lucky when you get the right results. But it just sort of took off a little bit, and I went to a race in Sydney, and a lot of road race guys and supercross guys and motocross guys all come and done it because it was the flavour of the month.
Mm. Yeah.
And I rode a CRF 450. I was 16 and I crashed in every session. Didn't finish a race most of the time, but I had a couple of really fast laps. And a guy named Paul Feeney, who was running the Husqvarna team at the time, his son's Brock Feeney.
Yep.
I was going to say.
Yep. And Brock was only, I think, 2 or 3 years old this stage. And so Paul's from Goulburn, where I'm from.
Yep.
Seen my surname, remembered Dad, and come down and said hello and seen I was going all right and said, oh, why don't you come up and do the first round of the Australian Championship next year, I think it was that year or whatever, on my team. And so we done it. I crashed in every race. And that year I crashed heaps. And Paul just was really good to me. And he just always would joke that it'll be easy to stop a fast guy from crashing, so you just keep doing your thing, mate. And he literally was the mentality of, like, you must ride to win every time you ride the bike. So I spent a lot of time on my ass that year, but anyway, he sort of helped me. And at the end of that year, we had another international race where some American guys come out, and just luckily, it all clicked for me, and I didn't crash, and I was one of the only guys that battled with the Americans. A guy in America got injured on Husqvarna, and a guy named Paul Lima called me from Husqvarna in San Diego, and so we got an injured rider. We need a replacement. We like what you're doing. Do you want to fly over and do the first round at Road America? And so, yeah, Paul and I flew over, and that was it. I got second in my first race, and they said, you better come back because you're second in the championship. And I got second again. And then so they got me. It was literally like, okay, we'll get you back again. And I come back 3 weeks later, and it was a doubleheader at Colorado. I swept the weekend. Was leading the championship. So this is in the ultimate class, which is – so there was Lights 450, which was the main class, and the unlimited class was the big bikes, over 600, over 450, sorry. And so it wasn't the premier class. But in the premier class, I'd got a couple of podiums, qualified on pole position, and so that's how it went. And then Husky flew me out to Europe, and I signed a contract for the following year, and that was it. I was doing supermoto. I was only 17.
How cool is that?
That's crazy, yeah, man. 17 years old.
Yeah, it was really cool. And so before I knew it, I was sort of – I'd sunk my teeth into supermoto, and I was really enjoying it and doing X Games and living in America. I was living the dream. It was great.
Yeah.
And spent 2 years with Husky, 2 years with KTM. And at the end of 08, I'd planned to try and go to road racing anyway. I was hoping I could maybe win the championship and want to try and go road racing. And that was sort of the time the world stopped for a bit as far as sports go. GFC hit, and I couldn't find anything in America. But I literally flew back to Australia and walked around the paddock at Sydney at the last round of Australian Superbike with my backpack on and asked every team if I could have a test ride with, like, no experience. I'd bought a ZX6 that year and done a couple of track days and a club event. And it's like, looking back, I'm like, what right did I have to ask a factory team if I could ride for them? But, I got a test ride out of it. And you don't see it. Like, you don't really see – like, I wasn't that young. I guess I was 21, 22, but I was just walking around asking for a ride.
Yeah.
With, I don't know what I – who I thought I was, but Phil Tayton gave me a test ride, who ran the Suzuki team for a lot of years, and that was it. I was road racing then. So I've been lucky, I guess, a lot.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
Like, you get the start just through luck, I guess, and then you've got to prove yourself from there, I guess.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, you've got to make your own luck a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, going around and asking people for rides, the audacity to do it is what you have to do, and that's why you got that ride at the same time.
Yeah, got to put yourself out there sometimes and get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, you do, and it's worth it. It's worth it in the long run, isn't it? Obviously.
Yeah.
But now that's it's a shame with the GFC because there's so much more opportunity out there, and America was just pumping money into motorcycle racing and supermoto and motocross, and supercross was huge, and the Moto America AMA Superbikes is massive, and it just seemed like it all stopped overnight.
Yeah, yeah. When I was there in 2005, 2008, like watching Matt Mladen ride, like he was making serious cash.
Oh yeah.
I think Ben Spees, I think I heard him on the Gypsy Tales podcast. He was saying that he could make more money in AMA than going over to MotoGP.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure he went to World Superbike because he couldn't make the money, I guess, in America.
Yeah.
At the same time, like I know he really enjoyed living and racing in America.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I imagine like it was somewhat the money is the reason he eventually went to MotoGP. Like, what do you think? What was that all about? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Oh, I guess I'll have to go to MotoGP. I can't make any money racing domestic superbike anymore.
That's right.
But him and Matt just had the most epic battles.
Yeah.
Oh, didn't and they like, ever?
Yeah. And like it was great to watch. And I guess because they couldn't lose, they were worth what they were getting paid because no one could beat them.
No. So. No. And it was big money. And that's so cool. It's so cool to see a domestic series obviously be like that. And then hopefully, you know, somewhere like the States can bring it back up again and bridge it with Australia at the same time. It would be great to see at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, it would.
You're keeping up to date with everything in MotoGP as well?
Yeah, yeah, I love it. I'm what's the front of my mind now at MotoGP? I just want to see Marquez win a race.
Stop the pod.
I like it.
I got Jack. It's funny because I feel bad because I know Jack a bit and I'm mates with him. And so like I'm a massive supporter of Jack.
Of course.
But like, and I sort of overlook him because I'm mates with him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, I want to see Jack do well. I think he can do well, but it's just such a tough, it's a tough grid. Like, it's man.
So competitive.
It's so competitive. And the bikes, it's so important to have everything working. But I'm enjoying a lot about it. I'd like to see less aerodynamics.
Yeah,
yeah, we're with you.
So it's probably it's difficult. It's scary to give your opinion, and this goes to the world.
Yeah,
we'll do it for you. Aerodynamics suck.
Yeah, but I just think it's really exciting at the moment. But I do worry that the direction it's going, it'll just be too expensive to do it.
Yep.
Like, you know, some manufacturers will get pushed out of it maybe.
Yeah. It's interesting because in 2027 they're obviously changing the format again.
Yeah.
And there's new rules coming in. I think they're going down to like 850cc bikes or something like that. 800, whatever it is. So I don't know what that's all about. And, you know, there's always been these rumors now, BMW coming in, Kawasaki's pulled out of World Supers. Obviously, they've got Bermuda there, whatever it is now. So
you reckon that'll just be that'll be what they dream of, making a MotoGP bike, and we'll just make 150 of them and go race it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
or whatever the number is. You
yeah,
know?
Like, yeah.
I get the feeling they're just like, you know what, let's just go for broke.
Yeah.
And
it won't be a Kawasaki.
Yeah,
and we'll build a GP bike and take it World Superbike racing.
Yep. Pretty much,
it's mad.
That's what they do best, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's all right. So it's hopefully they do in 2027 some more aero clauses or something just to bring it back a bit, because like we watch it and you will notice, Troy, with the heyday of even like your Rossi or your Marquez or whatever it is, like. You see the mind games they would do where they would follow someone for 10, 15 laps almost.
Yeah.
But you just obviously, you can't do that now. You got to...
Yeah, your front tire will overheat
or you
lose the aero or whatever
it is. Yeah, you got to be half a second back. And then, as you would know better than anyone, trying to bridge then half a second again, that'd be a lot of hard work.
Yeah, it was good the days where you could change direction quickly and take different lines and... it's sort of, I don't know, it's really exciting now, like, because they're going so fast.
Yeah.
But I just worry about where it's going, I guess. Yeah.
Mm. The good thing is at least it's just competitive. Like, you can't pick a winner.
Good thing, yeah.
We do our top five tips and I don't think any of us have got it right so far.
No, not even close sometimes.
Yeah, not even close. Yeah.
I think it'll get easier for us now they're back in Europe. Like, this round this weekend's more normal. Like,
Yeah,
so I think it'll be a bit easier as the year goes on. But, it is exciting for that. Like, there's so many good riders out there. And I guess it cost us like he's the flavor of the month, and he's really competitive, and he's probably doing things on the bike that we thought was maybe not as possible anymore. But I still love it. Like I love following it. It's great, and I do enjoy even the aerodynamic side of it. I really enjoy it.
Mm.
It's just that I don't enjoy Formula One that much anymore.
Yeah, like that's fair.
The technical side I do, but as far as the raw, the show's great to follow.
Yeah,
the actual racing is not as exciting as it used to be.
Yep.
And like, if we keep going with aerodynamics, that's where this is going to go too.
For sure,
100%. I mean, Coda wasn't too bad though.
Yeah,
Coda was pretty good.
That was a great race.
It was a lot closer than recent races. So fingers crossed that can translate now. Once we're back in Europe and all the quick guys can follow a bit better.
Acosta doesn't seem to care about his front tire overheating, and he doesn't have issues. So yeah.
Maybe it's just being naive and three races in, but he's whatever it is, it's working. So he just needs to keep going.
What do you reckon his potential is for this year?
Mate, I don't even know. Like, he could be you can't rule anything out. If he keeps it on two wheels, he could be top five, top three in a championship. Like, you never know.
It's so hard to pick. Like, I mean, these next few rounds will tell a lot, as you mentioned. Once we're back in Europe, I think you'll start seeing the guys that we've all thought will fight for the title really step it up. So, but then again, like, he's been battling with them anyway. So,
yeah,
God knows. Like, top five, top three is not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, that's right. I think we just need to wait, strap in the next few rounds. He's still so raw to it that, like, there's no expectation on him at the moment. Mm. They're just like, oh, he's doing so well. Oh, he's doing so well. This is great. But then it'll just be interesting to see what happens when the realization that, oh, he's in the title fight. Okay, he can win. Okay, let's try and win a championship in our first year, and then let's see what happens.
Yeah. And that'll be the toughest thing, like you mentioned on it before, the mental side of sport. Like, that would just become a lot for anyone.
Yeah.
Just about.
When you've been dreaming of being a MotoGP rider all your life, and then all of a sudden your first year you're up there in the championship. Like, yeah, he's an amazing talent, but he's human. Like, you know, I guess Jet proved that it's possible last year. But
true.
Like, it'll be interesting to see what happens when the realization that, okay, I can fight for a championship comes to him. Because it seems like at the moment he's just enjoying it.
Yeah, he's just loving life.
He's like, oh, shit, I'm pretty good at this. Like, I'm better than I thought. Yeah, I'll keep pushing every race and see what happens.
Yeah.
And yeah.
We have a rule over here at Republica Studios is we find a gem in motorcycle racing once every 10 years. There seems to be just a new alpha, I guess.
It checks out.
Early 2000s, Rossi. 2010s, Marquez, and then right back on it, it's Pedro Acosta 10 years later.
Yeah.
You know, before that, it was, you know, it was a little bit closer maybe, but yeah, Dylan still win five titles in a row. Like,
Dylan was definitely one,
you know, so it just seems to be every 10 years we just find these new diamonds. And I think Marquez proved it. He won in his first year in 2013. And like,
yeah, it is possible.
It is possible. And, you know, like.
But what would, like. What are KTM going to do if Gas win their first MotoGP championship?
Yeah, the irony of that, isn't it?
So, look, I and maybe, I don't know if it's a popular opinion, I don't think he's going to fight for a championship this year.
Yep.
But he's definitely going to win a lot.
Yeah.
I think he's definitely, that sort of special rider.
Yeah.
I just think it's, there will be challenges throughout the year, and I just feel like more than ever, experience pays in MotoGP.
It does.
And you see with Bagnaia, I'm not necessarily a fan of Bagnaia, but he's definitely proving that he's a really calm and cool operator.
Yeah.
And he's okay with not leading every session, and he works through his weekend slowly.
He just builds through it.
And he always builds. And I used to think, he's just getting data from the other teams and wakes up Saturday morning with the best setting from whatever bike. But the reality is, I think he has a process he sticks to, and that works for him. And I reckon that's something that Acosta's probably still developing.
Mm. Yeah.
He's probably just flying by instinct at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's worked out a few times. But, yeah, I think for this year it'll be hard. Yeah, it's just – I mean, I guess until it happens you think it's impossible, I guess. But he may. Hopefully he proves me wrong. Maybe he'll fight for a championship. It'd be exciting if he did.
Oh, absolutely, man. It'll be crazy. I think – just about anyone will be rooting for him too. I don't think they'll care about it. Who else is in the championship? That's for sure.
Yeah,
he's got the personality, Pedro. That's for sure. I named my cat after Pedro Acosta. That's how much I like him.
Yeah.
I got to sneak that one in there.
Yeah.
but look, I don't know. We'll know by Mugello. Mugello, probably it's a couple races, three races into Europe. You're going to know by then, I think, if he's going to be the real deal. But I can see it happening, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Gas. It has to be a factory bike. Like, I don't know. Like,
I think someone wrote into us and told us that they're all on the same bike.
From what I gather, they are,
yeah. That would be, I don't know, it's so up in the air. Because don't they just call it the same, what do they call it, RC19, isn't it?
Yeah.
What it's been called the last few years anyway.
Mm.
So I'm not too privy to that. Like, maybe we have to contact KDM headquarters and see what the go is there.
Yeah, they'll get a straight answer.
Look it up on Google, you'll find the number.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's it. It would just be like if... I feel sorry for Jack as well because he's been under so much pressure, I guess. And then you've got Pedro coming in and, like, it looks like, God, it's almost signed, sealed and delivered. Like, they're going to put him on a factory Red Bull KDM, you know.
So. Yeah. Yeah, who knows? Like, this year is going to be really exciting for the silly season and where everyone goes. I think Jack's got a place in MotoGP.
For sure.
Yeah, he does.
I think he'll end up on a good ride somewhere. He's got his value. Whether he turns himself into a genuine title contender or just a perfect teammate, like, I don't know. It's up to him now at the moment, at this stage of his career, I guess, if he can sort of make that step to being, you know, on the box every weekend and capitalising when he can and winning races. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, yeah, I feel bad even talking about it because, like, just being in a really low level Superbike championship compared to that. It's like there's so many variables even at my level that like it doesn't matter how much self-belief you've got. Sometimes there's things out of your power and you just can't quite get the most out of the bike. And so who knows what's going on, but I definitely think he's got a place in MotoGP like for a few more years yet.
Yeah, and he's got so much experience and knowledge and data knowledge. And as Daniel, you've said, like, he's brought so much over from Ducati to KDM, like, that has to hold its weight.
Oh, of course. And he's a race winner.
Yeah.
Like, people, again, we're always quick to forget he's won races before on two different manufacturers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's just rolling around waving at the crowd every week.
That's right.
He's got a lot to give still.
Yeah, and the thing with Jack is you can tell that there's an extreme amount of talent there because on the first few laps of any race, often he's fast at the start of a weekend. Like, all them little things that coming from a rider's perspective, that's the stuff you do when you've got it, basically. Like, so whether he overrides the bike too much in some areas and uses too much tire, whatever it is, like, the reality is when the conditions are variable, that guy's fast all the time. So he's a huge talent. It's just a matter of piecing it together.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's all gotta click.
Yeah,
it's all gotta go right.
Yeah,
I tell you what though, Maverick Vinales, I could never pick him. Like, I don't know what's going on. Like, he's nowhere, and then wins a race, and then he's nowhere, and now he's like the title favorite. Like, it's the craziest thing ever.
It's one guy you wouldn't put big money on.
No, God, no.
Like, no way.
Like, and such a talented dude. Like, but he obviously, like, now you've got to consider him a title threat because all these weak points are gone. Like, he's aggressive in the races. He just made so many good passes. He's good at the start of the races now. Like, he's happy to push on at the start of the races. He's won a sprint race. Like, whereas before, you could just guarantee that he'd had the fastest last few laps of the race and guarantee that he'd get towed up at the start.
Yeah, that's it.
Whereas now he's got himself past that. He looks like he's, like, fit as this year.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's lost a bit of weight even. Like, he looks like he's changed something. So, and the way he's riding is really aggressive. So, yeah, and he's still got time. It's like he's been around for a while now and you think, geez, come on, Maverick. Like, you've been such a talent. But obviously he's still only, what is he, probably 27, 28?
Yeah, it'd be something like that.
Like, if he hits his straps now, he could still win a couple of world championships.
100%.
Like, yeah.
Good package too. He probably is one of the best bikes, if not the best bike on the grid, in my opinion.
What do you reckon about Quartararo staying at Yamaha and not going over?
Understandable though, for 12 million euro, yeah, 20 million on.
It's what do you do? Changing money.
Yeah,
I would do the exact same thing, honestly. Yeah. And I think they're rolling out a brand new bike.
Yeah.
At the Monday test.
It's still like, inline four though.
It's still an inline four, but
not a V4.
Chassis, yeah. It's like new chassis. I think it's a new engine though. Everything. It's a brand new bike. Yeah. So.
We'll see.
And imagine if he does end up winning on that. Like he'll be,
it'd be a good story.
He'll be one of the greats then.
Yeah.
Whereas like, yeah. Yeah, it'll be, yeah, what do? When there's that much money getting thrown at you.
You gotta take it. Like,
it's kind of stupid not to. It's that old saying, be silly not to.
But it was different for Marquez, I reckon, because he'd already made that big money.
That's right.
Like, and whereas like Quaro's got his first massive contract, I imagine, and
Marquez is just, he just wants to win. Like he's done it all anyway. He just wants to relive the glory days. And
like I feel like he had a bad injury at a similar time. I had a bad injury, and like your perspective changes. Like he'd just be so hungry to feel like he used to feel and feel like he's back to where he was. Mm. Like it's like, I could imagine if I know from where I was at, I just wanted to prove to myself I could get back to where I was. So I imagine he's probably doing the same thing, just trying to feel the way he did pre-accident.
And it's like that video, I'm sure you've seen it, when he's on the plane and he shows the scar and he's like, I didn't do this for pleasure.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
We had the same injury, just he tried to ride a bike a week later. I had 5 months off. No, I had other injuries, but that the thing is, like that injury we had, like when I come out of hospital, they said, okay, that's fixed, that's good now, it's strong. So like if I only had that injury, I was allowed to do stuff.
Yeah.
Like, but man, it felt so weak. Like I don't know what. Obviously, it's never the same. But I couldn't even move my arm.
Is that in Darwin? Was that the one in Darwin where you smacked it up on the wall or whatever it was? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And he had the same break.
Yeah.
And then he went out and rode a week later and twisted the metal plates or something, and his arm twisted around or whatever, and then he got an infection and.
Yeah, it just all went wrong for him.
Yeah. So, and I imagine he's probably got, like I had a small bit of shoulder, like I can't sort of like get my arm straight up now.
Yeah.
Here was a lot worse. I think it was all twisted up and,
What was the rehab process for you?
Slow and long and frustrating, but because I had a few different injuries, it was just a long, slow process and I couldn't do any upper body work, lower body work. I just faded away, lost a lot of strength.
Mm.
I was in a wheelchair for about a month after that, and then the way I think, like there was a few complications because it was so badly broken in my humerus and my hip, and then I had a tibia fracture as well. But they had to operate on my hip and my arm right away, and there was a lot of blood loss and stuff like that. So they basically just put three screws into my neck of femur, and it was sort of the fixation you'd do to an elderly person, basically.
Mm.
So they'd be in a wheelchair for a few months, or they'd be sitting at home. But you couldn't weight bear, and the only way for that big bone to grow back together is with weight and blood flow. So in a wheelchair for 3 or 4 weeks, and then like it started at 5 kilos, 10 kilos of weight. 20 kilos, 40 kilos, 50 kilos, and then, okay, you can try and walk with it. It just broke. Like, I don't know where I broke it, and I reckon I was too hard on it, probably.
Yeah.
And it just broke, so I had to go back in, get cut open again. Then I got a proper fixation on it, and then I walked out of hospital. I was allowed to start walking straight away and weighting it. So then it started properly, and, oh, man, it was so painful.
Mm.
Like, I was on painkillers and pain meds for it. Because I had the second operation, I was in pain for a long time. And then the painkillers just make you feel crappy.
Oh, they're the worst, aren't they?
Yeah. You just don't feel good. And yeah, it just took a long time, really. Like, I can't remember what was the best and the worst, but like, it was just slow.
Yeah.
And you just want everything to happen yesterday.
Yeah,
of course. And then I come back too early and tried to ride the bike, and I was just so weak. And then, I sort of played it out like it'll be fine. I'll be right. Went and done 5 days of testing in a row at Phillip Island to start the next year, and I was just creeping. I couldn't ride the bike, and oh man, it was a frustrating year.
Yeah, for
2022 was a frustrating year because I was just not the same rider. I couldn't do anything. I'm sure it was the same with Marquez. Like that bike obviously we've established the Hondas, they're struggling with it, but yeah. there would have been times where he was nowhere near able to get the most out of the bike.
Of course.
And but yet I imagine, I don't know how he took it, but for me, because I was going so well at the time, and then all of a sudden the absolute identical bike, I couldn't ride. Mm. It was too, I was too weak, and yeah, just it was a shit period basically. 2022 was hard. Yeah. I got through to probably, so the injury happened in June 2021. I think I got a podium the 1 year later. But even then I was hurting. Like, Darwin's a funny track. There's no grip up there. It's so hot.
Of course. Yeah.
And so it's all left-handers, and left-handers, I'm a lot stronger now than I am on the right side. And it just worked out that it was a good track for me. No grips, not a lot of physical, like it wasn't a lot of like weight going through the body because it was not a lot of grip there. And so, yeah, got a podium there. But even then I wasn't ready to go. And, yeah, by the end of the year I was still just not the rider I was basically. Yeah. Yeah. I was only lucky that Honda kept me on for 2023 and we sort of started getting the ball rolling. And I started riding a lot of motocross again.
Yep.
And changing the training up, and that helped a lot. So I sort of just had to start from the beginning. Like I was...
Yeah, strip it all back.
Yeah. Like when you're a kid, you just ride a lot. And
yeah.
Then I was at a point where it was sort of coming a bit easier for me, and I'd rock up on the weekends, and by Friday arvo, I was going good and back in the game. And then I'd sort of spent 6 months doing not much and needed to go back to basics again, build the rider fitness up.
Yeah, for sure. What's it like combating that mentally? I've always been intrigued of how people think or how riders think coming back from something so big. Like, what were some things that you did to help you get through it, whether it's meditation or, you know, so anything along those lines?
Yeah, it's like I didn't see anyone about it. I don't actively meditate, but I guess, like, it was just, there was so much doubt. So, you go through, like, the first times on the bike, there's, like, you know, is the brakes going to fail on this bike? And you have all these stupid thoughts. And,
yeah.
But basically it's just all, for me, it was just physical. Like everyone would just say, you just need to get your confidence back. Well, I couldn't be confident because I had no physical ability to do it. So, and as soon as you're struggling physically, you get scared. Mm. And yeah, I don't really know what happened, but there was a point where, like I'd always think it, like you don't really forget hitting the wall like that, like it just, you have flashbacks about it, and I guess they just go away as time goes on.
Yep.
But like at first it was just like I'd roll out of the track on the track and the first thing I'd see was how close a wall was, or like
you start to notice little things a bit more.
So even at Road Atlanta last week, there was a section that you flip into this right hand corner where you don't brake, and same as Darwin, you don't load the bike, and the wall was the same angle and pretty close. You're definitely going to hit it if you crash. That first session, I was like, stuff that, this is sketchy.
Yeah.
And then in the rain, I was in the warm up in the rain, I was like, I can't, like, that's way too close. Like, that's so dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure every other rider just, you see it once and you keep riding, but that just looked exactly like Darwin.
Yeah.
And even after a few years, I'm like, oh man, that's sketchy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So you never really forget about it, but it just, you just, as time goes on, you sort of, time heals all wounds.
That's it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Absolutely. But repaid the favour, 2023.
Yeah.
Came back really strong.
Yeah.
Great title fight.
Yeah, it was really good.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Went down to the wire at the bend.
Yeah.
We were there for a couple races. I was there for round one with you guys with the World Supers, and then we came down for the Phillip Island round as well.
Yeah. The two worst rounds.
Yeah, well.
Always.
Maybe that was our fault.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, it was great.
With a bad luck charm.
Yeah. No. It's not it. It's me. It's all in my head, I think. But it was a fun year. And Josh Waters is someone that I like. When I started junior dirt track, he was the man. So
yeah, right.
Yeah, I've been towed up by Josh a lot over the years. But he won the championship in 2017, and we were in it that year. Like we went in the last round really close again. Yep. He won it that year. So we have had 1 year there where we went toe-to-toe, but like I come into road racing, I replaced him on the 600 when he went to the Superbike, so I was teammates with him. He dominated straight away in Superbike, and then he had a really bad injury as well.
Okay.
And, he had a really bad injury. Like, You guys should get. Have you had a chat to him on the podcast?
We want to get him on. We've had a chat to him about it.
Put in a good word for us.
He's had a really interesting career. Like, he definitely a guy that probably should have made it.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, to the world championship. Like, yeah, he had a really bad injury that we don't know a lot about. He was testing in America with Yoshimura Suzuki.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
He had a bad hit to the head, and so he was my teammate at the time, and so I went through that with him, and he would come to the track in his rehab, and yeah, that sort of changed him a little bit, really. Like, he's I wouldn't say changed him. At the time, he was a lot different, but yeah, he got back to his best, and so I was on the team, and he'd come back and done a couple of races here and there, and just won every time.
Yeah.
And then I went overseas, he went overseas, and we didn't really race again until 2017, the year he won it.
Yeah.
So last year in 2023, we're both on a really great team.
Yeah.
No excuses. We both had
good packages.
We both had really good packages. And then, yeah, we got to go down to the wire, like, at Tail and Bend. It was pretty cool for me. I have probably been beaten by him more than he's beaten me.
Okay.
Especially in our junior days. So, like, for me, it was a big deal to try and
take
on Josh in that championship. And the fact that we both sort of stepped up in the last round and it was just us.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's funny, when the championship's happening, the two guys going for it just step up.
Yeah.
Like, we're not that much better than everyone else. But on that day, we're out front by a mile, and it was just us two going for it.
It was the perfect script.
It was a bit surreal when he went down in race, because he never crashes.
That's right. That's true.
He had a front ender, and I'm riding around the track. I'm like, shit, I've won it. Like, it's going to happen. So, yeah, because at the start of the year, he really dominated them first two tracks.
Yes.
Like, and he's good at them tracks, and I think on any bike, he has a lot of success in them tracks. So it was a hard start of the year, but we clawed our way back out of it, and then, yeah, it ended up being such a fun year for me. Like, yeah, and I'm sure as the years go on, he'll enjoy it, and I reckon he's got plenty more championships in him, so hopefully he'll forget about that one.
Was it a sense of relief? Like, obviously, you've spoken about everything you've gone through to then obviously, you know, take the crown. Was it like crossing the finish line? Was it just a weight off your shoulders? What was the emotion like?
Yeah, it was real special. Like, I get tingles thinking about it. It wasn't just another championship. It was the fact that I'd been to my worst part of my sporting career, and like, yeah, thinking I was never going to be competitive. Like, you know, in 2022, I qualified 17th or something on the last row of the grid on a factory Honda.
Mm.
Like, it's unheard of, sort of.
Yeah, and then the end of the following season, I won a championship. So, like, it was real special, like, coming out of that and doing that. So, and it was special, like, and I was with the exact team that went into the war with me. Like,
yeah.
The same guys, like, so they'd been through it all with me, seen my frustrations, and, we all went through it together. So it was really special. I'll never forget it. It was amazing, really good.
Yeah, the celebration looked pretty wild afterwards. You guys all looked... like James said, like a big relief, you know. Just
I can't remember what round it was, but one of the rounds there, we just sat in the truck, and it was Darwin. Darwin in 2022, like, we sat in the truck and a bunch of grown men, and we're just almost tearing up. Like, it's, from what we went through the year before, and then 1 year later, sitting on the podium. It's pretty cool. You realise as you get older, it's about winning.
Yeah,
but when you're younger, you're really selfish about it. You just want to do it. You don't care what it takes to get there. But then as you get older, you realise it's more fun to do it with people.
Yeah.
Now I've got a young family, and you're part of a team like that. It makes it more special, really.
Yeah, especially with Honda bowing out as well.
Yeah.
It's just all, like, it was like a fairy tale, really.
It was, and that's why when I decided to leave, it was like, I don't want to, like, yeah, it sort of, it wasn't from any other reason than I just wanted something different.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, you know, we had really good years. We had a rough year and I crashed, and then we dug ourselves out of it, and now we've had, you know, a fairy tale ending to the year. Like, that's the best way to finish up. Like, we'll only have that memory now. You're only as good as your last race. Yes. And we just, like, when we, as a team, when we catch up, we're like, yep, we finished on top. And now here I am trying to tame a new beast.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it like throwing your leg over? Because it was very unknown. No one sort of knew Obviously, the baggers came up when everyone was freaking out that you were moving across. And then I think I seen a poster. You guys were at Sydney Motorsport Park doing the summer series.
Yeah.
I was like, that's Herfoss on a Duke. What's going on here? And then it got announced not long after.
Yeah.
What was it like jumping on that for the first time?
It was fun. I mean, I grew up watching Troy Bayliss and Troy Corser, and you know, I'm the next Troy.
Troy's and Ducatis. It's a weird.
Yeah, they were the glory years for Ducati and World Superbike. Yeah, and now they returned to they're doing really well now again. But and I'm really good friends with Ben Henry, who runs the team. He lives, you know, his workshops. I can hear him on the dyno. I'm that close to his workshop, and the itch is there.
Of course.
You've got to admit, it's cool. To ride that bike around Phillip Island and, holy shit, it was incredible. The qualifying lap around there on a new service and...
Yeah.
It was
lightning that weekend.
Yeah.
Man, I hadn't done a 31 in my life. And then here I am, a low 30. Because I've been around for years and there was times when GP bikes are doing that in my career. So, it was awesome. Yeah. It's got its quirks. It's a complicated bike, don't get me wrong. But when it was working around Phillip Island there, it was so much fun to ride. And, you learn as you get older, you realise that every bike's different. And, last year at stages, I'd think, why is Josh, what's Josh doing that? He's riding so weird. And, I just didn't understand. He wasn't himself at some rounds. And then when you ride the bike, you realise there's quirks.
Yeah.
There's a reason why he's doing what he's doing, because the bike won't let him do any different. So, it's been fun to adapt to a new bike and, it's good. I'm enjoying it.
It's a sick bit of kit. It's really cool looking bike and you can hear it when it comes out. You can close your eyes and you know what's coming past.
Yeah. And I was on the grid at Road Atlanta last week and Josh Heron's on the grid on the Warhorse Ducati and that thing. Man. It's like there's no... silencer on it, it's just loud as anything. And when he revs it, it just cracks. It rumbles. So, they're an impressive bit of kit. Really cool.
Absolutely. I mean, hearing you guys crank into turn one up here is brilliant.
Yeah, the deceleration noise is intimidating when you're in front of one or behind one, but when you're on it, it feels cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is what the bag is like. It's just got that real rumble to it, When we're on track, honestly, it's a funny sound. They just rumble the whole. It's you can almost feel it in the ground.
That's sick. Yeah. We'd have to try and get over there for a race.
Yeah, come over.
Yeah, bloody oath. Well, and it'd be cool to see Indian bring him out and you do a few show laps or something. Phillip Holm, MotoGP. Yeah. That would be cool.
Yeah, at COTA, I caught up with Kyle Wyman after it, and we're just joking about how good it'd be if we just done demonstration laps at the MotoGP, because at COTA was so much fun.
Yeah.
And imagine if you just got, we do the top six, we do the challenge. Imagine if the top six baggers riders just were a travelling circus with MotoGP. We used to have stunt shows all the time. Just do that kind of thing. We'll just flip a coin and we'll put on a show and we'll just decide who wins on the day and make sure it's close racing. And it's a show at the end of the day. Yeah. MotoGP, Formula One, it's a show. If we can bring another aspect to that. Because it's funny, the GP guys enjoyed it.
Yeah.
They see superbikes, a superbike to them is just a dumbed down MotoGP bike.
That's right.
And they know how fast a superbike goes. But then they've seen the bagger rumbling around COTA. A few guys walk out. I come in after warm up and Marco Bezzecchi's out there watching, gives me a wave in the wind. I'm like, oh, g'day, mate. So it's cool. Yeah, it's really cool.
That's all that, but that's really not out of the realm of possibility, especially now that Liberty Media has taken over.
Oh, yeah. True.
Yeah.
True. Good point.
Yeah.
Big American company.
All American brand.
Yeah.
Maybe you will be traveling around the GP circuit next year.
Yeah. I wouldn't complain with that.
Oh, absolutely not. Sneak your way onto one of their bikes as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be the dream, wouldn't it? Imagine getting to ride a GP bike around a track. I imagine it'd be hard, but I imagine it's like when you go to the local motocross track and there's a double there, a tabletop, you work your way into it. And so with the superbike, you're sort of, it's all soft and the tyres are forgiving. There's no aerodynamics and doesn't have as much power. You can sort of work your way into it. I imagine doing a fast lap on a GP bike, you have to, from what we're all told, you've got to put so much load through that tyre.
Yeah.
It'd be like, mate, you've got to go into that corner at this fast or it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Kind of like jumping the double at the track.
Yeah.
Like, you're either doing it or you're not.
That's
it's
it.
Like, and especially the aerodynamics coming in, you have to put the load through the tyre and they're probably developing tyres around having a lot of aerodynamics.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you ain't got the balls to put load through that tyre, that bike's not going on the track.
No.
That's what I imagine.
You're probably on the money, to be honest.
Yeah.
I remember hearing Jack when he first jumped on the Honda when he went from Moto3, obviously straight to MotoGP. And obviously everyone talks about the power and he did as well, but he said the brakes were something like, you know, he's never felt before. Just the stopping power of those bikes is just insane. And then you're going to think of the pressure that goes through your whole body and your upper body just to be the strength to just stop that bike and then tip it in. It must be immense, you know.
Yeah, like I can't imagine how physically hard it is to ride the bike. So like I know speaking to Jack, it's really, it's a physical, the bikes are so fast and so much load. They stop so quick, they accelerate so quick. Like I know for me, even going to Japan, say for the 8 hour you're riding like a semi-factory bike, like a kit bike, and the amount of force, braking force in that bike for me was, you know, eye-opening. You know, imagine being on carbon brakes and a long bike with ride height devices and you can just brake so hard. I'm like, yeah. Like I know with the bagger, it obviously doesn't stop quick because it's so heavy, but you can pull the brake so hard because it's so long and heavy. So you just pull that brake so hard and it's scary. But yeah, and that's what a GP bike would be like, it'd but be it's insane. So light.
Yeah.
It stops so quick.
Yeah.
So did you say you've done the Suzuka 8 hour?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. What years?
What years? 14, shit, I can't remember. 14 and 15.
Yeah.
And I think 17, 18. Yeah, I got seventh 1 year with Team Asia.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
And 19 maybe I done it with Moriwaki.
Oh, yeah.
And that would have been really cool except for that track, the Bridgestone tyre is amazing.
Yeah.
And I was on a really good bike, the Moriwaki Honda, and we were the top Pirelli team. So we were still fast, but in the race it was an uphill battle. Like the Bridgestones there. It
makes sense, a Japanese tire and a Japanese track as well. Yeah, like I'm sure
The rules are open, so there's special tires and special bikes and full factory bikes. So I'm so happy I got to do it. I'd love
it's
to
such
ride
a cool race.
Yeah, I would love to ride a factory bike there.
Yeah,
because it brings all the best riders in the world together. And I think I think it's going to come back to where some GP guys are doing it. I've heard Baguio wants to do it. And
yeah, that'd
really.
Be sick.
And I think Ducati this year are putting in a proper effort to do the 8 hour.
Yeah, I think they are.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, I can't be sure, but like they haven't. You know, they've had the twin cylinder bike over the years, which is a bit highly strung. So they've got the V4 now that's going to go the distance. And I've heard that whispers that Bagnaia wants to do it.
Oh, that's
awesome. If you're the MotoGP champion, you want to do the 8 hour, I imagine it'll happen. So
that's really cool.
It's a fun track. Like it's dangerous. Like it's,
it would be.
Yeah, but it's silky smooth. Yeah, really fun.
Mm.
Yeah, we've fallen in love after speaking with a few guests about endurance racing, and we've really sort of taken it on board and started following it a lot more. So
yeah,
it's something that we've shown more interest in.
Yeah, yeah,
that's pretty dope.
Yeah, I love it. I find it so fascinating, endurance racing. Like we spoke to Damo, Cudlin, Phil Oddle, like doing the Le Mans 24-hour and just racing at 2-3 in the morning is so wild and can hardly see, or you can only smell fuel, or you can only smell the sausages in France. Like it's insane. But as you're saying with Suzuka, like it's such a dangerous track. I remember Colin Edwards was talking about there's places you know you just can't crash, like that right hander after the hairpin, you know, there's
you
no run
the chicane, it's literally if you go on the grass you're into a fence within a meter and a half.
It's
obviously not a straight on angle, but yeah, it's sketchy, but there's so much history in it, and it's such a fun event to be a part of. You sort of turn a blind eye to that.
Yeah, you don't worry about it. Yeah,
yeah,
that's unreal, man.
Oh, I love it. Does it with going back to Kota on the bag? Was that the first time you've been a Kota?
Yeah, yeah.
What was it like riding the baggers through that track, and then did it take a long time to get? To know the layout, I guess, and the braking points, because it's a massive circuit.
Yeah, it was hard. It was I would loved it. Like Monday morning would have been nice to have another race because I sort of had a few races on my belt and got my eye in. But yeah, I mean, it was like a 2:20 track for the bagger, like or maybe a bit faster than that, but 2:15 or something. But like it was a lot to learn. Yeah. Short sessions, 20-minute sessions or something.
It's not a lot of time.
So two sessions, then go race. So it was. That's the hardest thing for me this year is learning the track. So I just got to make sure the bike's got a good base and it feels good so I can just head out and learn. And there's been, like, I could definitely make this bike better, I think, if we had more time.
Mm.
But at the moment, it's like you've got to prioritise what's important and you've got to learn the tracks. And first you've got to get to the start line and get a position. And then, yeah, then we can hopefully next year fine-tune the bike a bit. But, yeah, Coda was really hard to learn. Yeah,
I'm sure.
Very, very busy. Busy and quirky track, a lot of corners I hadn't seen before. Usually corners are like there's only so many corners you can see.
Yeah, that's right.
Where there's a lot of different sort of undulations and blind turns and quirky sort of corners. So yeah, it was pretty hard.
Did you ever get any good photos of you coming over the crest there with the flag in the back?
Yeah, I got a couple.
You got
of
one
photos
of them.
There.
Yeah, that's sick.
Iconic now already, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, the big bagger come around there.
Yeah, you got F1, MotoGP, and the baggers all through the Texas flag. It's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So you're obviously doing the whole series there this year, and you're penciled in for next year?
It looks like I'll be there for another few years, yeah.
Oh, awesome, man.
I'm finished this year off and work out whether I get onto a super bike as well as the bagger or just stay on the bagger.
Yeah.
Not sure yet, so yeah. I got a bit of an itch to ride a superbike over there, so.
Oh man!
But the baggers are so much enjoyment, and it's a great gig. So I want to try and stay on that bagger as well.
Yeah, definitely. Because a lot of guys, or there's a few guys that double up.
Yeah, the guy that won the championship, Hayden Gillam, doubles up.
Yeah,
I think he rode three classes last year: superbike, superstock, and baggers. And then you got Bobby Fong doing double duties. There's probably more. Max Flinders, who the lad I was talking about, they got third. He rides a superbike. So it's doable.
Yeah, it's possible.
It's a reasonably busy weekend, but it's not too bad, I think. Like even in Australia, there used to be guys doing double duties when I first started.
Yeah.
Mm. I would have loved to do if Honda could have done a 600 superbike, that'd have been cool.
Oh yeah.
But them days are sort of gone now. They used to have, a grid full of factory 600s, but yeah, times are changing.
It's definitely times are changing of 600s for sure.
It's almost a dying class, isn't it?
Yeah. We need a class like for them kids, but it's hard to know really where it's going to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely couldn't tell you. And it's weird because like in the normal retail market, 600s are taken off. Like everyone wants them.
Yeah.
But then for racing, it's just, it's definitely a dying class. So I don't know where the future's going to hold. What? How do you see going over to the States now? Can you draw any comparisons between ASBK and what you see over in America of Moto America, or is it just totally different?
No, it's really similar.
Yeah.
Like, I think we work at a really good level here, especially because we don't have a lot of adjustment with the bikes from the technical side. From the technical side and the rider's side, I think we're at a good level. I think anyone who's competitive in Australia can be competitive in other domestic championships for sure. But it's just a bit bigger. Everything's bigger.
Yeah.
It's America.
Yeah. So there's more bikes out there. There's more people. And I do like that it's World Superbike rules so that the bikes are legit superbikes. So, and I think that's where it's hard for us. The costs have got to be cut so we can go racing, but they're not going to look at us to take us to World Superbike or British Superbike or Moto America if we're just riding superstock bikes. So it's like, I don't know the answer to it, but we need to make the bikes a little bit more adjustable. And there's ways of doing that without getting too expensive. Like I think like offsets and linkages and stuff's not a big cost. Why don't we just throw them at the bike and then we can make them a bit more like a World Superbike.
Yeah, just little things.
We don't need to have $1 million electronics. We can go to British Superstock style controlled ECU, but just have a lot more adjustment in the chassis, and that way, it's more in line with World Superbike. Like, how good would it be if an Australian Superbike rider could just jump into World Superbike for a wild card?
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
Like the older days were. Yeah, that'd be good.
100%. It's I think one of the biggest frustrations that I find and a lot of people seem to find for ASPK is the length in between races too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know what, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Like, yeah, I mean, like it's hard because there's not a lot of professional teams that are full time. So they probably need that time. But as a rider, it's like we're rusty.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're rusty. So it's when you do get a chance to go overseas, you're not really on the ball, are you? You sort of just,
yeah, that's
you,
right.
Like we had months and months. Like last year, I broke 8 ribs and a collarbone after Morgan Park. I was fully recovered and fully fit by the time the next round came around.
That's crazy. Wow.
Like it was, we had like 3 months or something.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah. And, but yeah, ASPK doing the best they can. So it's like, yeah, there's no, I don't have the answer, but yeah, it would be nice to have a bit more of a condensed calendar. It's like we need to have a championship that goes from September through to April.
You're like the fourth person this weekend has said that. Yeah.
Because we don't really have an off season. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be ideal.
Yeah.
Especially over summer, better weather.
Even if it was like October through to February, you might get international guys coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Just spending their off season racing in our summer.
That's a good point.
Yeah. That's a great point. But I mean, they're doing good things with all the guys that have come back in to help out, Troy being the ambassador, Troy Corser, you know, Chris, Steve Martin, all those guys, they're doing a great job of trying to lift it back up.
Yeah, it's good. It's great to see. Yeah. And hopefully they're enjoying it. And yeah, it's good to see that, you know, their love and passion for motor racing still burns for them. And that rubs off. It brings people to the track. So it's good.
100% it does. It's really good. And it's a really good event. Like, it's been so much fun being up here for the weekend as well. And like Queensland Raceway, it's got great facilities here.
You
can see the whole track, which is great. So if anyone's listening that's thinking about coming down, come down because it's great racing, by the way. Like, even the OJC was a great race today. Shout out to Ethan Johnson getting second. But it's all through to all classes. It's great racing. You still don't know who's going to win. Yeah. Everyone's up there. And, yeah, it's just been good. And as you said, having Troy Corser, Vermeule and everyone like that, like legit riders here as well that can throw the experience, you know, are talking about racing. It's so good to see. And it's obviously what the Aussie Superbikes needs.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
All right. We've got a special gift for you.
Really?
Yep.
Thank you.
Daniel.
This is a gift from us, mate. We give it to all the special guests that come on. Shout out to Stacey and HAC Australia. Thank you very much for helping us out with this one. Just a little something to say thank you so much for your time. As we've said, this has been a long time coming. And
thank you very much.
We're just wrapped that we got you on, man. And we always see you around the paddock and that. You've always been super good to us and glad we could, smash it out.
Yeah, it's been awesome, epic, man.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I expect you to see you wearing that tomorrow during the race.
If I was more organized, I've got a gift for you guys too, but we'll present that at a later time.
Yeah,
beautiful. Awesome. Sounds good. Yeah. I'll be looking forward
to it.
That's
cool. Thank you.
Mate, good luck for tomorrow as well.
How's this?
Yeah, genuine Motorsport Republican decals there.
When you guys go big, I'm going to sell this on eBay. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
You're already going big. When it goes like multi-million followers, F1, MotoGP.
Slowly but surely, mate. We're trying out.
Just do it.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it.
Thank you, man. We appreciate the kind words.
Brent Stevens on the next one on the list. So you try and wait until you get a bit of time to enjoy the whole thing.
Yeah, we get people messaging us saying that there's mow the lawn, they listen to it, whatever it is, listen to it at work, whatever it is. It's great to hear.
Yeah, it's good.
Next flight over to the States, hopefully not delayed, but you can get on a few more of them.
Yeah, that'd be good. Awesome. Thanks for having me, lads.
Thanks, Troy. Cheers, mate. Bye.